In my work, I've come to see how childhood survival strategies can metastasize into full-grown addictions in adulthood. Some of the clearest examples have come through eating disorders. Eating is one of a child's earliest activities. Eating is also one of the first activities in which a child recognizes they have some level of control. A toddler turns their head to avoid the unwanted spoonful, clamps down on the lips, flings the rejected item across the room, or through gesture, sound, or touch persistently communicates what is wanted. A child learns what the caregiver wants and recognizes they can cooperate or not. Mealtimes for parents of toddlers can present a myriad of challenges in a mismatched contest of wills. In a full circle sort of way, so can potty training, which is another basic bodily function that children learn they can, in some measure, control and use to control the adults around them. Children are highly inventive in figuring out how to get their needs met. They learn how to manipulate their surroundings and the people in them. Because these survival strategies are at least somewhat effective, the child can become conditioned to rely on and utilize them exclusively. The child who learns to whine to get what they want can become a demanding adult. The child who learns they get attention if they refuse to cooperate can become a querulous adult. The child whose caregivers aren't reliable can learn, like Luis, to rely solely on themselves. I believe addiction can manifest in adolescence and adulthood when basic needs are unmet in childhood. The child latches on to a substance or behavior that makes the pain go away, at least for a while. That pain could be physical, like hunger, or psychological, like fear or anger. The child is concerned with relief in the moment and does not have the capacity to comprehend the long-term consequences. A major difficulty with childhood strategies, then, is they can be based on an incomplete understanding of their marginal effectiveness. Children also watch and learn how others meet their needs. A woman I worked with was addicted to anger, which was her immediate and preferred response to just about every situation. We figured out Sheila had learned this strategy from watching her mother. Growing up, she told me, she was a constant target of her mother's displeasure. Sheila learned to feel relief and even pleasure when her mother's sights were turned on someone or something else. In those instances, Sheila aligned herself with her mother, attempting to avoid being a target. These times also allowed an alternative way to vent her own anger. If Sheila joined her anger to her mother's, that was acceptable. Any other expression of anger was not. As she grew older still, Sheila realized how she could use her own anger to control others, just like her mother did. I asked Sheila why she hadn't rejected her mother's anger model. Her response was simple. It was effective. Pushing back on that perspective, I brought up the damage her anger had caused in relationships. I suggested her anger was only effective in making her feel better in the short term, but was in fact ineffective in making her relationships better in the long term. I also asked Sheila to consider the quality of her relationship with her mother now. Sheila reluctantly admitted, "I'm still afraid of her." The downside of upbringing. Sheila's anger habits were so ingrained that helping her learn how to handle her anger differently was neither quick nor easy. We tried a variety of strategies and tools with only moderate success. Waiting before speaking gave Sheila additional time to gather her ammunition. Writing letters to different people.